Good morning. What's going on, Finger Lakes? It's Friday, and that means it's time for a look at the weekly headlines here on FingerLakes1.com. That's the Debrief Podcast presented by FingerLakes1.com. I'm Josh Durso, and joined today, as always, by Jackie Augustine. Jackie, we're here. Wow. It's been a busy couple weeks here.
It has. Yes, it has.
Tons of news. How you been?
I'm doing well. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm waiting for spring.
That's literally well, we had a little bit of spring, and then we...
I know.
Back in the deep freeze. Yes.
So lots of controversy in the last 2 weeks, lots of quick-moving headlines. We have a state budget. I guess let's get a quick – I know we planned on starting somewhere else, but let's get a quick just a quick thought about the budget. It's done. It's over with. State budget. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, I'm glad it's done, right? Better that it be done than all these years when it just kind of lingered around. However, I heard a really interesting discussion, actually it was on Evan Dawson's show, Connections, where he was talking about, you know, but his guests were talking about the frustration with trying to parse out legislation that's tagged along with the budget, so it becomes less a financial document, more a policy document, which is interesting because really a budget does set your priorities. It communicates your priorities to the community, to the public. So in that regard, you know, things like a plastic bag ban or something, I mean, those are policy things that communicate to the public where you're headed. But sometimes it's hard to tease out what the actual budgetary line items are of most importance because they get kind of swallowed up in the other policy headlines.
Yeah, and it begs that question, should the policy items even be included in what's supposed to be a financial document?
Right,
for
right.
The state?
And I mean, I do agree that you want your budget to be a roadmap of what you care about and what you're investing in, but sometimes too much stuff gets tacked on, and like I said, then you never really get to see the meat and potatoes of the budget, and then I worry that things get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, and it definitely seems like that probably did happen because there were, especially for, I'd say, the average consumer who might not be totally embedded in reading these headlines day after day and seeing how they shift day to day. The plastic bag ban is now looks like it's going to be sort of expanding into restaurants or could be expanding into restaurants. So stuff like that kind of might get lost. But first things first, we are talking today about leachate. Why are we talking about leachate?
Because through a little bit of, I guess, investigative journalism or attempts at investigative journalism, it seems pretty clear that Casella has this plan to send their leachate from the Ontario County landfill by train, which is made possible through some upgrades that were promoted by Ontario County last year in a rail corridor update and analysis study that the county funded and that Casella did not overtly participate in, but clearly was at the table for in some, maybe with a different hat on. And now they will be shipping, I guess if the county approves it, they'll be shipping the leachate to some unsuspecting community in Ohio, which again is just another way of them keeping their costs down at somebody else's expense and allowing them to defer good waste management practices and really do some upgrades on the county landfill proper. So, you know, it allows them to just ignore some problems that they don't want to deal with and shift the burden to somebody else. And I find that wrong.
What's the underlying concern, I guess, then? Because obviously there are going to be some people who hear that and say, well, great, it's not going to be here.
Right, not our problem. Right,
yeah.
Yes.
What's the sort of underlying problem for residents of Ontario County to that end?
Well, okay, the first problem, which actually has to do with what's currently on the table, is that anytime you allow a business to deal with a mounting issue, okay, what to do with the leachate has been a continuous problem for Casella. Again, read their online financial reports, which apparently the Board of Supervisors aren't aware exist. They haven't spent any time with them. You go and talk to them, and basically their meetings are a cross between, I don't know, like Rotary and AA. It's very difficult to get any kind of governance response from them. So they seem to be taken by surprise that leachate is such a big problem for Casella and is affecting their bottom line. So the county, unwillingly, is facilitating them pushing that on down the line and, you know, increasing their profits. That is a problem for us because that means that they're not going to be investing in the kind of on-site pre-treatment, the other leachate measures that might reduce the smell at the landfill, instead of being forced to invest in better technology and doing things better on site. They'll just ship the problem elsewhere and call it a day. The bigger problem going forward is that Casella has a very big and very dangerous leachate problem in Chemung County. And Peter Mantis has done an excellent job of following that. But that leachate, which has started to test positive for radium and potentially radon, so we have this radioactive leachate, right? And of course, Casella will tell you it's still within acceptable limits, but let's just be honest. When you're talking about things like this, similar to talking about lead exposure, it's a cumulative exposure, right? Sure, I might be able to come into contact with something radioactive for a moment and be okay, but it's cumulative exposure, which is what causes problems. So anyway, they've got this leachate. I imagine there aren't going to be a lot of municipal wastewater facilities in New York State that want to take that on. Certainly not Geneva, thank goodness. But anyway, now you're going to have this very convenient rail solution, just a truck drive away. So I don't think it's completely far-fetched to think that Casella will truck that leachate that they have problems with up to Manchester or Shortsville, load it onto some rail cars, and send it to Ohio. And again, I do not think we should celebrate that that is becoming someone else's problem. I think we need to understand that that actually is a real problem for us that we should demand that they deal with themselves.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think part of the problem might be that, you know, there just isn't really a great way to deal with this stuff at all. As far as, you know, the things that I've read, the things that I've seen, you're still talking about, in this case, radioactive leachate, and there isn't really a great way to handle it. And I think it sort of gets back to the root of the problem, which is what we talked about a couple of weeks ago on this program, on Connections, when I was there talking about the digester with Peter Mantis. You have to get to a place where better policies and better habits are preventing this type of waste to be created in the first place. Now, that said, I think it's kind of an ironic twist that New York State, while continually appearing to up the ante in terms of what they expect or their expectations for how companies handle any kind of municipal waste, while they're upping the ante, they're also saying, hey, companies, go ahead and ship it outside of New York State. That's cool.
Right.
And it's just, it's this bizarre, like, out of sight, out of mind approach, even at the highest level, at the state level. It's just like, it doesn't make sense. If you want to do something, or if you're going to come up with an effective, waste reduction plan, which I think is pretty much what the DEC is going to have to do to start really addressing these issues at their core and at their root, instead of just dealing with all the results that are coming out afterward. I think seriously, that's the starting place. And to me, that's the most troubling part is like, well, we don't want this here, but we're cool with it just being shipped somewhere else. Right. And, you know, that's not really a good plan, especially long term. Yeah. Maybe it's a short term solution because they have a better method of dealing with it. That part hasn't really been talked about. But if that were the case, I would also hope that, you know, companies in New York State or New York State would consider implementing those better methods here locally.
I would love to say that really they've just found this supremely advanced wastewater treatment facility in Ohio that has all this technology we haven't thought of. I would love to say that's really why they're doing it. So, okay, let's be charitable and assume that's the solution. But, you know, this is just another species of the same problem we're encountering. New York City doesn't have a good solid waste solution, so they send all their trash to us. We don't have a good solution for dealing with the leachate, so we're going to send it somewhere else. Like, where does the buck stop? And I believe that you're right. The DEC needs to understand this. They are in over their head. It's very much like the FAA allowing Boeing to inspect their own jets, right? We see how that went. The idea is, if I think there are a ton of well-meaning DEC employees who want things to be done correctly and better than they are right now, but they are dealing with this problem of so much trash, so much leachate. What can they do but rely on the companies, SMI, Casella, to give them ideas about how to handle it? And that's the problem. That's why we locally, you know, everyday people have to get more engaged about this, because the DEC officials work for us. Like, we pay their salaries, right? They are state employees. That's paid with our state taxes. They should be protecting our interests instead of just making things as easy as possible for the private sector to dump on us.
Yeah, it pretty much comes back to the planning aspect. I think local communities are kind of stuck. I'm not sure that even with the best of advocacy from Ontario County leaders or Seneca County leaders, I don't think you're going to sway the state one way or another.
Well, you know what, though? I agree. I'm not trying to say that we could just immediately put a stop to things. But here is something that could happen. And this is why Ontario County is a different situation than Seneca County, right? Seneca County, they're trying to deal with a private organization that owns its own land. And, you know, I mean, Seneca Meadows is its own entity.
Right.
In Ontario County, that is our landfill. Ontario County residents own that landfill. And our supervisors are supposed to be the stewards of it. What they have done is just said, hey, I don't know anything about trash. Let's just get all the trash people to tell us what to do. And the fact that they don't understand how that is just a complete cop-out, and, I mean, it's totally an abdication of their responsibility. Let me put it in words they might understand, right? It's quitting. Like, they have just given over their responsibility to somebody else. It's ridiculous. And I think people are getting sick of it. You know, these guys, they want to go and they want to have their formal meeting and laugh and talk about whose birthday it is. Do they actually want to talk about what's going on in the county? Because not one committee gave a, like, detailed report about anything. If you went to those county meetings, you'd think there's nothing going on. And I think that's because there's not a lot going on with the supervisors, frankly.
And we talk about it all the time. You need elected officials who are engaged, but you also need elected officials who, you know, are interested in taking on some of the heavier topics, some of the things.
Yeah.
They can't just sort of be glossed over with a quick resolution.
Right. They need to actually want to do the job and not just get the title. I mean, these guys clearly love the title, but that's got to come with some work.
So Geneva City Council has a vacancy. It still has a vacancy.
Yes.
Where does that stand right now, and what is sort of the next step in theory?
Well, I don't know where it stands because, frankly, I went to the last council meeting. Every time I go to these council meetings, I hate to say it, but I get a little more discouraged. I'm not sure the city council knows what they're supposed to do. I mean, they spent a lot of time talking about speed limit stuff that we've talked about. It comes up every 5 or 10 years, and they have the exact same discussion. And this time, the city attorney was in audience and asked if he could just clarify what they can and can't do, which, again, is what many people, I mean, this council has many of the same members that have been there for a while. They seem not to have remembered that they had the same conversation just a couple of years ago. So they had it again. So the idea that they can handle the appointment of a vacancy or the filling of a vacancy, I guess my expectations are low, but that doesn't mean we should let them off the hook. The people of the 6th Ward deserve representation. And it is, I think maybe they feel like they are honoring John Grieco's legacy by leaving the seat open. But here's the thing. You can respect John Grieco's service, appreciate, you know, the work he did for the city, and still understand that there's no way John Grieco would have said, oh, yeah, the 6th Ward, you can forget about them for 6 months till your election. Or not even six. I mean, more than 6 months, right? The election's not till November. Someone wouldn't take the seat till January. Yeah. So to me, it's a real slap in the face to not just the people of the 6th Ward, but even to the legacy of John, that he was always trying to say, hey, someone pay attention to Ward 6. And the way they're going to honor him is to basically say, people of Ward 6, you don't really need a voice for another year. I mean, it's ridiculous. That should have been item number one. They should have, at this meeting, after with the proclamation honoring his service, said, and you know what? Here's how we're going to ensure that residents of Ward 6 continue to have a voice on this body. Mm-hmm. And instead, not a word. Didn't even address it. They didn't reference the city charter. They didn't talk about New York State election law. I mean, maybe because they don't know it, but that's no excuse. Like, at some point, across the board, if you can tell, I'm getting fed up with people saying, well, I don't know what we're supposed to do. Like, that's your job. It's your job to know, and then it is your job to do. So get going. I don't know. Sorry. Yeah. I left that meeting Wednesday night, and I just thought, is there any group of elected officials in this area that's actually doing any work? I mean, the staff are, thank goodness. That's the only thing keeping things running.
It's interesting. And I had seen surprisingly little coverage of in Geneva from the Finger Lakes Times and surprisingly little coverage on the vacancy and what the process was going to be or what the parties were going to do to sort of try and come up with candidates or you know, a body to fill the seat until the election.
Right. On
one hand, I can understand the idea of, well, we don't want to make a decision on the voters' behalf. And if there is turmoil within any of the parties, and I'm not saying there is or isn't, I'm just taking a stab in the dark here. If that's the case and there's a little bit of uncertainty within that body that would be making the decision, maybe they feel it's safer to wait until Election Day and then to let the voters decide, and then you don't have any of the damage on your watch. The flip side of it is I completely agree with what you're saying. You know, folks need elected representatives. And right. I guess given that Geneva has an at-large seat, maybe there's an idea that, you know, the at-large counselor would in some way, shape, or form represent them, although I don't know that that's the intent of that type of role.
No.
You held the at-large seat. To me, this is just another example of, and I've sort of batted around the idea of talking about this more, but I think overall, parties are pretty much failing at the local level. Elected party, your party representatives, they're failing people at the local level to the point where they're either serving as a roadblock for folks who want to get involved, mm-hmm. or they're fumbling what should be fairly easy processes just to avoid what might be maybe a little bit of criticism along the way for making a decision, God forbid. I mean, undoubtedly, no matter who they choose to be the next, to be that fill-in, right, until the election, you know, one, they're going to have an advantage. They would, in theory, have an advantage during the election cycle itself.
I suppose, although I think that holds less locally. But
yeah, but then the other side of it is there are going to be people who are unhappy with the decision, no matter what.
Of course.
There are going to be people who are unhappy come January 1st.
Right, that's right.
So, you know, that part of it just, I understand, like, it's clearly a calculation. Like, that decision is clearly a calculation. If the move is not to elect someone.
It's the calculation of cowards. I mean, that's the thing. Nobody says, no one should be involved in politics if their calculation is, this is going to make somebody mad. Like, hello, that is politics. I mean, you're not intending to make people mad, but if you think you can please everybody, you are better off being, you know, a sports coach than, well, no, they don't please everybody anyway. I don't know. I can't think of a role that pleases everybody. But, you know, the idea is, like, you don't belong in politics if you don't have the gumption to say, now here is what needs to happen next. And the thing is, here's the strange irony. John Grieco was appointed to city council to fill a vacancy. Mm-hmm. We have appointed councilors to fill vacancies during John Grieco's term several times. In every case, the argument was made, people deserve representation. But, and you mentioned that there's not a lot of coverage about this in the Finger Lakes Times. To me, that gets at the underlying issue. This is Ward 6. People don't care about the people in Ward 6. We've seen that when it comes to what people are notified of in terms of contamination. We have seen this in terms of what gets done, in terms of road improvements, what counts for the DRI. Here is another way in which council, and I'm not blaming the parties because I feel like ultimately it's a council decision. They better get to it. Council is telling people of the 6th Ward, sorry, that one person, one vote thing, we're just going to handle it. We'll let the at-large pick up the slack. That is ridiculous. And they wouldn't stand for it in Ward 3. They wouldn't stand for it in Ward 2. They wouldn't stand for it in Ward 1. But in Ward 6, it's all right. And to me, that is a slap in the face to the thing John Grieco represented, which was, don't forget about the 6th Ward. I just find it frustrating.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I wanted to sort of throw this up real quick just so people can see what we're talking about here. We're talking about Ward 6, which I threw a map up on the screen.
For, okay.
Describe to people where Ward 6 is for people who aren't from Geneva.
Okay, so this would be Exchange Street North, going up toward like the Deluxe. I'm trying to think of things that people would recognize as being Ward 6. The Deluxe, Zotos, Guardian, so the Industrial Park, Courtyard Apartments, Clark Street, and
sort of the north side? Is that like
yeah,
the north side?
Yeah, it's
the
north side of the city. Mm-hmm. And from kind of Genesee to the city line, to border city line. And just again and
what's
again.
What's the reason? What do we think is the reason then for why is it because it's on the outskirts that it's not in that core downtown district that everybody seems to care most about? Or is there some other underlying?
It's demographics.
Demographics.
It's demographics. It is lower income, higher rent, less white. And this is the problem. I think a lot of councilors probably don't necessarily know a lot of people who live in the 6th Ward, so they can't think of who they might appoint. And heaven forbid, they should go out and talk to people, talk to the neighbors, and find out who are some community leaders. You've got a neighborhood association. Is anybody talking to them? The council should have said, here is how we are going to structure a process to find leadership for Ward 6. They haven't done it.
So speaking of Geneva, we had gotten an email a couple weeks ago after our last show from Mike. It sounds like Mike lived in Geneva at one time. He wanted to know our thoughts, and this sort of gave us a little bit of food for thought about the various efforts over the years to move the rail line out of the city itself, to pull it out and to put it elsewhere. He referenced an effort in the 60s, and I think there have been some discussed efforts over the years. And even more recently, I think, was this something that came up during the DRI discussions, moving the one of the railways
out? Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was proposed as like a DRI project. I mean, it wasn't. But I think there was some discussion of whether or not you could work with Finger Lakes Railway to at least change the siding that they use along 5 and 20 there, and maybe direct trains westward a little bit more. I am not part of those discussions, so I don't want to speak out of turn about things that I don't know about. But I think, from what I have heard, there were discussions that actually, A, is feasible, and B, is something that has a lot of support for. I'm not sure what the logistical holdup is. I'm sure there's money involved. I'm sure that's part of the problem. But yeah, that would be great. And I think, you know, even not to keep talking about John Grieco, I don't mean to, you know, attribute to him positions, but I do know he had said on several occasions that it would be great to be able to get the train out of people's backyards along Andes Avenue, right? And or I'm sorry, Middle Street, but the Andes Avenue backyards that can see the lake when the trains aren't there. And I think that, you know, that has a lot of merit. But again, if you've got a council that's having trouble doing administrative tasks, you have a council that's going to have trouble with any larger project lifts.
So I just want to hear. I want to throw the map back up.
Okay, good.
That we were just looking at. And
And now I can see it. Yep.
Okay. That rail line, I think, I'm not an engineer, but I think would have to go pretty drastically into Ward 6. Just that's my first thought. Like, given where it is, where it sits now, it seems like if you were going to relocate it, the only way it could possibly be relocated is if you were taking it directly through a more...
Well, it is in 6 right now, and there is another line that heads what I guess would be northwest. I think the question is more about diverting the traffic that way than on the current.
So my thought is, after what you just said and after we just talked about, this would probably raise some eyebrows. Like, a move to put more trains in Ward 6 would probably make some of the folks who live in Ward 6 a little bit uncomfortable and a little bit annoyed with the fact that in some ways they're kind of just sort of being thrown to the side.
No, I think it's the opposite, because the main issue that people have with the trains is, if you look on the map there along the lakefront, that rail, it's the stacking of the trains. It's the... it's the siding that is there. So the idea is that if you moved that siding somewhere just outside the city limits, it's not so much that the trains coming through, the quantity would change. It's that they wouldn't be sitting there and, you know, there's always, like, stuff along the tracks. And people cut across the tracks to get to the lakefront because there's no clear way to access the lakefront from Ward 6. So I think people's complaint has been, why do these trains have to sit here all the time when they're being moved about? Why can't that happen somewhere else so that the trains just pass through the city?
Well, and before the trains, were those not complete streets that came out further from the city line, or am I getting really confused?
Well,
there?
Remember, that used to be, I mean, the configuration of that whole area down there used to be different. But yes, the idea is that Preemption Street could go straight across, but it doesn't, because it would have to cross like 4 tracks.
So in other news, we've got the resolution in Seneca Falls that was defeated. Obviously, I'm not going to spend a lot of time sort of breaking this one down. Everyone's seen the stories. If you haven't, plenty of links on Finger Lakes One. Check them out. Your reaction, I guess, is sort of the outsider. We've got two Seneca Falls stories. We're going to batch them together. We'll talk about this, and then we'll talk about former village mayor Brad Jones leaving the supervisor race.
Okay.
But first things first, your reaction, not only to the resolution itself when it was introduced, but then also the way that it was discussed at the meeting this past Tuesday.
Well, I mean, I just saw it as a publicity stunt, really. And I guess maybe someone would say that no publicity is bad publicity, but...
Oh, this is bad publicity.
It was bad.
This was bad publicity.
Because, well, I don't know. I mean, my grandfather was a World War II vet and always said to me that... people's ability to speak their mind was one of the fundamental things that was worth fighting for. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea that, so to that regard, I guess Supervisor Lazaro has a right to speak his mind. But the point is that he's trying to punish an organization for recognizing somebody who spoke their mind. And that just...
The resolution in my mind didn't hold any water because the town hasn't given any funds to the hall since 2010. And when they did, it was just a 10% match on a grant, a $2 million grant that was ultimately turned into an $8 million investment on the town's behalf, for the town's benefit.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying it was a stunt. It was, we're going to stop doing something we're not even doing.
Right, and I think it sort of played on the fear that people's tax money here in Seneca Falls is being spent unwisely.
Right.
And while I believe that is the case, this is not one of the areas where it's being spent unwisely.
Right.
It literally just isn't being spent. It hasn't been budgeted in years. And frankly, given the finances of the town right now, I don't even think the board would consider making such a donation or such a match present day.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I guess if there were something that I didn't get to talk about, like throughout the process of covering it and sort of providing a little bit of analysis along the way, was that it took a group of people, vets, in Seneca Falls and in surrounding communities, and it attempted to, the resolution attempted to use them for political gain.
Yes.
And that should be a concern.
Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Lazaro is a regular as far as talking about what philosophy means and his philosophy of governing. And he spoke to it a little bit. He tried to paint that sort of line in the sand where this is, you know, we just can't do it. We have to make this point and we have to stand our ground. But this is not one of those things that is worth present day standing your ground over. If you want to advocate for vets,
right,
advocate for them on all of the other areas where they're not getting their fair share.
Yeah. How about healthcare? How about VA issues? How about
mental
saying,
health?
We're going to take a stand.
Housing.
Right.
You name it. Like,
right.
Workforce. You name it. They are not on a level playing field with everybody else when they return from their service. And that's, to me, that was the thing that was sort of lost. And it was clear, mm-hmm. you know, if there were anything that was very clear sitting through that meeting and listening to the vets who did speak, you could see that they were folks who historically have gotten the short end of the stick.
Yeah.
And this was sort of playing on that tragedy. And that, to me, is just, that's not good governing. That's not anything. It's
right.
just, that is, it's grandstanding.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the best thing you could say about it. And that's not a best, it's a worst. But the other bit of news from the last couple of weeks, obviously, former village mayor Brad Jones is out of the race for town supervisor. That leaves two individuals, Doug Avery, who serves on the board now, Mike Ferrara, who is circulating petitions and presumably would be on the ballot as a Republican come November. No other names have been circulated for that town supervisor spot. Supervisor Lazaro did not get his did not get endorsed for his second term. So there was that. That ship has sailed. So what is your reaction, I guess, as an outsider to the news that former Mayor Jones is out? And that is where we stand right now in this race, which seems like it will once again, at least from my perspective, be solely about the landfill and not much else, unfortunately. Right.
Well, I mean, I think it's unfortunate that he's out of the race, but I did think that his statement about why he was leaving does tell a lot about what's going on in Seneca Falls. I mean, it's true. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to see this in the Geneva election as well. If you're getting a group of candidates who are interested in a popularity contest, and I'm not saying this about any particular candidate in the Seneca Falls race right now, but I do understand that if you look around you at who your running mates might be, and you say, wait a second, people are not serious about solving problems. They're not serious about doing work. They want to get in there because they want the title, because they want to say that they're doing it, because maybe it comes with some small paycheck. I don't even understand that. But it is demoralizing. I can understand him saying, as I look around, I'm not seeing running mates who want to step forward and solve problems. And that does not bode well for the livelihood of all of us who have to live in these communities and be governed by people who aren't going to take the work seriously. And like I said, I worry about that in Geneva also. I'm hearing, and I don't mean to pick on the Republicans, but I do. I'm hearing some of the names that are being circulated, and I'm just thinking, okay, all right, we are about to get into an interesting environment where there's no institutional memory, there's no understanding of just basic operations, there's no, you know, active civic engagement leading up to this run. It's like...
Those are the candidates that puzzle me the most. Yeah. The ones who literally just come out of left field. You've never heard of them before. Right. A lot of people wouldn't know them if they encountered them on the street. Right. I think it's one of the big things that, you know, some people harness really well in local elections where they use that name recognition and that face recognition to get through elections when maybe their policy isn't as strong. But then other times you see people enter races and it's like, did you think about what would be necessary in terms of just letting people know who you are before you said, hey, I'm running?
Right. It's and like, you know, in full disclosure, right? I think people could make a criticism about my initial foray into public office that I kind of came out of nowhere. And I would say that's true. However, I was attending meetings and speaking at meetings and thought things didn't seem right. And then I was approached about running. And I thought, well, okay, I'll run as like a third party candidate so I can go to the debates and at least ask questions, make sure the stuff gets talked about. Did not intend to win. But that is the thing. At least, like, I'm not even hearing from some of the people circulating petitions even a modicum of understanding about stuff. And the problem is they all say that they're being prepped by some of the previous counselors. And I'm thinking, oh, man. Oh, boy. Like, this is... We are headed for interesting territory. So I think the same thing's going to happen in Seneca Falls, unfortunately. I mean, you know, Brad brought a lot to the table in terms of, like I said, these things like institutional memory and understanding of policies and the financial situation in a more broad sense than just the landfill. And if he feels like the field, the candidates for town board, not necessarily for town supervisor, but for town board, are lacking in those ways. Yeah, that does make me nervous.
Yeah, and obviously two big elections coming up. Clearly this year's big and the next year's big for obvious reasons. Right. But we did get a little bit of new information in terms of what one of the races next year might look like. We know Congressman Reed is going to see a challenge.
Right.
But now we also see that... Representative Keiko, he is also going to see a challenge. Roger Misso, a Red Creek native who flew combat missions as a U.S. Navy pilot, is the first Democrat to enter the 24th congressional race. He announced Thursday that his campaign committee had been formed. That means the money will begin flowing in and the whole process will get underway for him. This, of course, is interesting because it's a seat that's flipped. It's notorious for flipping. There were obviously some concerns this most recent election for Katko when he was challenged by Dana Balter, mm-hmm. that because of the money she raised, that he was beatable. Yes. Doesn't change the makeup of the district, which includes Syracuse and sort of that Cayuga, Wayne County. It's actually a pretty good hybrid of urban and rural
right.
together, which I don't always think happens in a lot of districts. Mm-hmm. So you do see a little more sort of back and forth. And in a lot of ways, Representative Katko has been viewed as sort of the moderate Republican representative. Right. So this will be an interesting race, and I will be very interested to see what role Roger Misso's service actually plays in the whole race, because I think that's something that, we've seen in recent elections, more on the Republican side than on the Democratic side. It works. It works. It gets people engaged. It gets them interested. They feel that tie to the candidate because of their service, right. and all of a sudden, it's another factor.
Yeah, I think, Representative Katko has been viewed as a moderate Republican, and I think that he's been forced to be, because if he's going to be a legitimate representative of his district, he needs to understand that a lot of the Republican policies work directly against his constituents' interests, and he has been able to say that. I give him credit for that. Tom Reed's not been able to do that. Representative Katko has been able to say, wait a second, like this actually will hurt people. And Tom Reed is still kind of living in his own bubble where things will be great and fine and everything's wonderful in the 23rd, and it's not. So I think that in that respect, of all the people to be challenged, I wish this challenger well, because I do think that by and large the Republican agenda is very bad for more rural communities, in terms of their economic interests. So that'll be good. But
to be fair, just to sort of push back against that a little bit, I'm not sure either party's overall agenda is very good for rural America. I don't see Democrats doing anything, going very far out of their way, with exception of some state initiatives, which have just meant economic development funding. I don't see where either party is really going above and beyond for that 97% of folks
yeah,
who live
no,
in those rural
districts. I agree that not enough is being done. But I mean, just like this healthcare, this new renewed attack on healthcare, let's look at who has the least access to healthcare and who is going to be hurt the most because they work for employers for which no plan is provided. And if you look at the makeup of our districts, both of these districts, the access to affordable healthcare, not that the current plan we have is perfect or even great, right?
Yeah.
But the idea that we have a lot of people who will be left with nothing if that is taken away. And you've got to be willing to say, okay, I understand this is the party line, but look it, I've got thousands of people who depend on this.
Yeah, so obviously one of the things that I wanted to talk about, national piece of legislation that I thought was interesting. So Senate panel this week advanced legislation that would levy a hefty fine on illegal robocalls. Yeah, those calls that seem to never, ever mm-hmm. end. Obviously, a lot of people want to see the phone company, the telecommunication companies crack down on who are ultimately allowing, the Verizons, the AT&Ts, they're allowing this to happen.
Right.
Already today, I've gotten six.
Oh,
it's 9:24. Everybody gets them.
Yep.
You can't stop them. Thankfully, my phone has this awesome feature where I can screen the call, and that takes care of the problem where I don't have to deal with it. But this is one of those things that's like, this is big and it's important because while some of the robocalls are just annoying, some of them are also legitimate spam, intrusive, illegal, like seeking to do things that are not good for the consumer. It's one of those things, though, that's just viewed as annoying. So I don't think it gets the attention that it necessarily should. But how often the reason why I wanted to talk about it is because I'm constantly seeing press releases from the sheriff's offices in the area warning elderly people, particularly, to watch out for these phone scams, which harness the same kind of they're going through the same avenue.
Yep.
So I think this is one of those areas where, yes, it's annoying, but let's forget about how annoying it is, and let's talk about and find a way to actually stop the bad thing from happening in the first place.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
and rant.
Unless you, if most businesses operate purely out of a profit motive, if it continues to be profitable for them to allow this to happen, it's going to keep happening. So if the way to diminish the profit motive is to assess a fine or a penalty for this happening, then yes, that's the way to solve it. It's unfortunate. We can't just appeal to people's better nature and say, hey, this is taking advantage of people who might think it's a legitimate call, might get themselves into trouble going along with it. Nope. You know, we started the show talking about this stuff, and I guess we'll end the show talking about this. Corporate interests are going to get away with as much as we let them get away with. So, yes, I think this is another case where we need government intervention to rein in this desire to just make a buck at anyone's expense.
And we've got a couple extra minutes, so I want to throw a couple state topics that we were going to talk about if we had time. Plastic bag ban. It's happening. It's real. Might be expanded, but it's real. What have you heard from different people as you've been just sort of going through your day-to-day life since the budget was adopted and the budget was passed and we ultimately found out that the plastic bag ban was going to be real?
I haven't really heard a lot about it. I mean, I don't know that it is a primary topic of conversation in the circles I'm in, I guess. I think that anyone who drives past the Ontario County landfill and sees all the bags up against the fence is glad that there will be fewer of them. I think people who use the bags to line their bathroom trash cans or to clean the cat box are going to have to find a slightly different solution. But overall, I'm not sure this is the kind of thing that impacts our lives to a great extent.
It's interesting because it's super, super... I'm taking a step outside of that circle and I'm saying it's interesting because it seems like those are the two... Like, you're either very, very offended by the whole thing or you're just like, whatever, it doesn't matter. And I think that kind of points to the maybe there's a socioeconomic factor at play there. Maybe there is some other factor at play there. I don't know. But it does seem like there's a lot of resentment towards this idea. And I'll be very curious to see how well it's implemented over the next year, because effectively it takes place March 1st, 2020. That said, I'll be very interested to see if we get some of the grocery stores just jumping on board early, like ripping the Band-Aid off real fast to just get it over with.
Well, they've got to get rid of whatever their inventory is, I suppose. But yes, I hope they're making a quick transition. I don't know. I just feel like this is another one of those situations where people get upset about it because they say, but I want it. I want a plastic bag. I want that convenience. And I'm thinking, okay, I mean, isn't that the problem with our culture? We want whatever we want as soon as we want it. And, I mean, this is, it's the same thing, right? Casella wants to truck their leachate because they want to, because it works for them. It's convenient. It's easy. They don't have to think about it. Well, you know what? Maybe it's bad for everybody. Maybe you can't do exactly what you want to do all the time because there are other people in the world that need to coexist with you. Like maybe it's the same thing I tell my kids, although my kids are pretty good about this. They know that I want this is not a good argument. But, you know, when they were little, you get that a lot. But I want it. I want to eat candy all the time. I want to do that. Well, you know, you got to tell people sometimes. I'm sorry. The world doesn't work that way. It's not all about you.
So then also we've got the mugshot ban, which has taken place. State police will not be releasing mugshots moving forward. County and city and town and village agencies, I guess, will be left to sort of make their own decision based on what the legislation says at this point, even though nobody really seems totally sure of what that legislation is, even though it's been adopted and it's done.
Right.
Brian Kolb's going to be our Sunday conversation this week. I will be talking with him later today, and I hope to get a better sense of what this actually means, because I'm not crazy about putting local officials, local cops on the front line and making them make the decision. If the state is feeling so confident that banning mugshots is a good idea, own it from top to bottom.
Right.
Don't put it on city officials, town officials, village officials, who are all dealing with completely different circumstances. Like, they're all dealing with completely different demographics of folks who live in their communities. So a decision in one place, while it's going to be viewed as equal to a decision in another place, it really won't be because of the differences in those communities.
Yeah, I mean, when we talked about this before,
arrest records not included,
right?
Thankfully,
I thought it made sense to parse it out by type of offense, right? By the thing you're charged with. Like, if somebody is charged with they're suspected of kidnapping, yeah, you should put their picture out so that other people can see that. If someone is, you know, accused of, sexual assault, you put that picture out. A lot of times other people come forward. But instead, they parsed it out by jurisdiction, which makes no sense unless, as you said, you were right. The real motivation behind this was, in the wake of these statewide corruption probes, some of these well-to-do people didn't want their pictures in the paper when they were charged with corruption. And who would be charging them? The state police. So now the ban is on the state police, but nobody else? I mean, that is just like saying, you're right, this was to protect the wealthy. We have passed a law to protect the wealthy, well-connected people who don't want to be embarrassed when they do something wrong. And that, I agree with you, is totally the wrong way to handle it.
It's, and the travesty of it all is that this is masked as a solution to a problem where folks in urban places, Rochester, Syracuse, say that this is unfairly affecting a minority group. And it's like, if maybe, you know, yes, that probably is the case. I don't know what the numbers look like, but just to actually sort of compare that to what the reality of this law is, I mean, there is no saying that the city of Rochester or the city of Syracuse have to abide by it. And that's the laughable part is it's masked as this great thing, but it's not.
Like when Victor, you know, when a couple of college students or high school girls steal some stuff from the mall, I bet we're not going to see their faces. But, you know, if somebody who's not white leaves with a bag of groceries from Walmart, we might see their face. I mean, I thought that was the problem that was trying to be solved.
Well,
and instead, nope, it's really just about people like Prococo and these other guys. Let's not put their face on the TV screen.
Let me put some context on this, because I get press releases from law enforcement agencies every day of the year and have for the last four. Ontario County, unless it is a serious felony case, basically does not release the mugshot unless it is sought out by the agency, by the actual like news organization. The city of Canandaigua doesn't seem to release any photos unless it's a felony charge. And they don't even sort of release the misdemeanor arrests in real time like a lot of other police agencies do. They do like the semi-weekly recap kind of thing, okay, where you get bullet point lists. And a lot of other agencies do the same thing. Cayuga County doesn't send out mugshots very often. Wayne County doesn't do it very often. The Seneca Falls Police Department does and doesn't. They're in and out. Seneca County, same thing. You have to seek it out. It isn't just sent out by default. This stuff is not, I think this is more of an urban problem than it is a rural problem. But in these rural communities, especially when you're talking about these instances of accused sexual assault or anything else where you are talking about there could be other victims,
right,
that is probably the biggest issue in my mind. And this legislation seems like a beginning, not an end. I
right.
think arrest mm-hmm. records are next. I think by next year, the governor will have enough going on this to kill arrest records, and that will really start a chain of reaction that I'm not entirely sure. I can't sum it up in a couple minutes, but that'll be big. Are you watching any story? What stories are you watching this week heading into next? I got one that I'm watching that is just, to me, pretty interesting. The story, I don't know if you've heard about it or not, the closure of the Phelps Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, is just
trying to figure out, is it closed then?
It's closed. Like, there's two large, confirmed it with my own eyeballs, two large for sale signs right on the building. There is some sort of note attached to the front door as well. I didn't look at the note, but it's just unfortunate to see one of those. You know, I've probably in my lifetime only been there maybe a half dozen times. Mm-hmm. But it's just one of those staples. And
right.
I think it's really reflective of these small rural communities sort of going through a transition. In a lot of ways, this is where folks get that ammo where they say, well, see, our community's dying.
Mm.
Where these institutions don't
right.
get their proper, even if they have to close for completely legitimate reason,
right.
they don't get their proper farewell, and they just sort of close under the radar, they disappear, and it's like that history is lost.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I guess the thing I'm watching is whatever's going on with the Ontario County Humane Society, because this keeps coming up at City Council. City Council sent a letter saying, hey, we're not getting our money's worth. Like, what's going on here?
This has been ongoing for like 3 or 4 months,
yes,
I think.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And then I guess some of the Ontario County Humane Society board members called individual counselors, a couple counselors, usual suspects, right, said, oh my goodness, well, someone says that we did something wrong. We weren't even paying attention. We just kind of signed off on this thing. We weren't paying attention. But they didn't try to get and go back and check the information. They just then took someone's word for it and said, we got to rescind this letter. And then three people resign. And I'm thinking, wait a second. There's clearly more to this story than is getting out, because I don't know. I mean, I don't want to even speculate, but let me just say it's unusual for things to go this way if there isn't more to the story, I guess would be the way I would say it.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping somebody's taking a look at that, but who? I mean, Ken Camara tried to get City Council to reinstate their letter and say, look, obviously we raised some legitimate concerns, and they're not having that. I don't know who's actually running this show in terms of looking at what's going on, because it doesn't feel like the Ontario County Board of Supervisors does any critical analysis of anything. So, I don't know. Our tax dollars disappearing. I'm not really sure what they're going toward.
And this is one of those, that's one of those ones that has been getting a lot of traction on social media.
Yeah.
People are really passionate about their animals.
Sure.
And when
yes.
you involve animals, it's almost like a different level of even people.
Right.
And it's been interesting to watch that one sort of evolve over the last several months. Maybe at our next show, we'll actually do sort of a recap of what the headlines have been and where we stand at that point in a couple weeks. And sort of look at maybe where Ontario County could go.
Yes.
If they were being proactive and doing things right.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, that's our show for today. We will be back in a couple weeks. I will be back next week with another episode. Until then, FingerLakes1.com, latest headlines, download the app. We'll see you next week.